You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 94, Discovering Star Trek Discovery. Today in the podcast, we talk about Star Trek Discovery. We've been wanting to talk about this for a while now since the first major trailer was released about a month ago. We will be doing another episode on Star Trek Discovery with a special guest soon, probably after the Comic-Con Discovery panel, because they likely will have some new information for us about the show. The show launches in October this year, and of course, a lot of Star Trek fans, us included, are very excited about it, but we're also worried about some aspects that we've seen in the trailer. We get into that discussion and more, including what makes for a compelling Star Trek story. That's coming up next on The Impromptu. When everything is broken and nothing's going right.
So, there's been some more news about Star Trek Discovery that I think we can talk about. It's been revealed that the show will be having a single story arc through the entire season. No alien of the week, monster of the week, tragic mishap on the ship of the week, holodeck malfunction of the week episodes. I mean, there might still be one or two if it serves the plot, but overall there will be one arc through the entire series. And then they also announced that they are breaking one of Gene Roddenberry's cardinal rules. And what is that rule, you might ask? It's the rule that I think is honestly what's kept Star Trek from having really good storytelling. And that is, all main characters must be, for lack of a better term, perfect. They cannot have disagreements with each other. They cannot have major personality flaws. When they talk with each other, they can never insult each other or whatever. Although Spock and McCoy was a little loose on that, I think. But yeah, that was one of his big rules. Like, the core characters had to be these morally upstanding, righteous people who exemplified his vision of what humanity would be. And you weren't allowed to go outside of that. Deep Space Nine bent those rules with Benjamin Sisko to great effect.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because they did that also with the villains quite a bit.
Yes. Well, the villains, interestingly, Roddenberry, like, in his rules, the villains were allowed to be awful people. Though I think it's interesting because, like, classic Star Trek and the first few seasons of Next Generation, they adhered very closely to these rules. And then when...
Well, Roddenberry was still running the show. He was alive during the first few seasons of TNG. So.
Yes. And then he died and the show got better. Yeah. So the show got better with him no longer around, because they started bending and even breaking a lot of those rules that he had set. Because honestly, I'm of the opinion that he was far too idealistic. Like, he had this vision that just didn't really make sense from a realistic standpoint. And to portray that on screen, I think the classic series was fine, but when you start to get to a more realistic show like TNG or DS9 or, I guess, Voyager, though that got more wacky, when you get to that level of realism, you need grounding. You need characters that feel believable. And those rules just don't work when you're trying to tell a story that's real and grounded, because nobody in reality acts the way that his rules expect characters to act. No group of humans is going to be perfect at interpersonal skills with each other. There will be tension. There will be conflict. You can't just say, oh, there's none of that in the future.
Right. It's just part of being human. Like, this is, you can't just change millions and millions of years of evolution. Our brains work a certain way.
Yeah. Like,
so.
And the mind-boggling thing is, Star Trek takes place in like 2334 or whatever. Like, not even 500 years. Like, less than 400 years from now. So to stand there and say, oh, less than 400 years from now, humans will just be perfect at discussing things with each other and having rational, reasoned arguments and discussing problems without people raising objections of their own or cutting in or any of that stuff. And everyone will get along and it will right. all be perfect and egalitarian. No.
And I'm going to say one observation that I have too in the Gene Roddenberry era of Star Trek, even though you say, you know, so the rules could be broken a little bit with the villains, but his villains tended to be a little more like traditional in the sense of how we, how people maybe think of a villain, that they have their own ideology and they're very, like, the difference between good and evil is very black and white.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, to me, one, even if you take Star Trek out of the equation, one of my all-time favorite characters and favorite villains is Gul Dukat on DS9. One of the most strangely charismatic and appealing and morally conflicted and becomes, he was already sort of corrupted, but he just takes it much further and just completely pulls the pin on that grenade towards the end of the season. And he goes through this arc in DS9, like you were saying at the top of the podcast, that it really broke the mold for Star Trek. And they sort of set that trend. And I think I'm glad that they're going to be sort of going back to that and maybe take it even a step further with Star Trek Discovery, because I really think there was something lost. Like, after DS9, what the hell happened to Star Trek? Like, they went back to these episodic things with Voyager, and then Enterprise was even worse.
Yeah, the less and said about Enterprise, the better.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you on that.
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited. I really like this idea that they're just going to commit to this new format, that they're not going to do this Alien of the Week thing, because I think that's one of the greatest, most appealing things about Star Trek and science fiction in general, and this, you know, episodic show, is that it takes time to develop these characters. We need time to understand these characters, where they come from, what their motivations are. And it's nice to see this arc, this progression. We don't want static characters. We want three-dimensional characters.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, people aren't perfect. They're, you know, Sisko's such a great example of that, especially what happens with the Dominion War. He's forced into a corner. He's forced to make these really difficult decisions that make you, as a Star Trek fan, make you think, well, what would Picard, I don't know if Picard would make those same decisions too, because he does some stuff that, like, Picard is always upheld as this morally righteous character that, you know, and yes, he did, okay, let's be honest, he did break the
Prime Directive
on several, he bent the rules on several occasions, but
yeah,
I mean, nothing to the extreme. And I don't think Picard was ever really put into the position like Sisko, because they never had anything like the Dominion War at that time in that series.
No,
so it's really interesting. Would Picard have made some of those same decisions? I'm not so sure.
Would he have forged intelligence and had someone murdered
to force the
Romulans into the war? No.
It's like that episode in season six or season seven, towards the end.
Yeah, the die is cast.
Where most of the episode is just him talking into the camera, and he's giving his personal log, and then he deletes it at the end.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, holy crap. Did he actually just do that? Yes, he did. And he says he can live with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe some fans will disagree, but that is Star Trek at its best. When it examines what it means to be human in the face of all of these things. Because at the end of the day, sci-fi is about us. It's not about the aliens or about the technology or about the ships or the planets. It's about us.
Well, and it's just
the
plain
human
good
experience.
Story. Yeah, but it's just plain good storytelling. Like, this is what Star Trek should be, right? It should be strongly written like that. And I'm afraid it's been very lackluster and very all over the place.
Yeah.
Even TNG, my much beloved series, I absolutely love that series. Mm. But let's face it, it was all over the map.
Yeah.
There were the good episodes were extremely good. The bad episodes were really bad.
Yeah. It remains to be seen how good this series is going to be. There have been a number of production issues, and you had Brian Fuller leaving and delay after delay after delay.
They do seem to have a good cast, though.
They do.
And they just announced that Jonathan Frakes is going to be directing a few episodes, so.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very promising. The trailer, there were parts that seemed good. There were parts that were less good. But obviously, we'll have to reserve judgment for the first episode.
Well, I'm no longer worried about the production, though. This probably looks like the most expensive Star Trek series we've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, supposedly they're spending between $6 and $8 million per episode.
That does worry me, though, because this has happened before where very expensive shows get canceled because they're too expensive.
Yeah.
So please, to God, I hope they can keep this up. You know, I really hope. I mean, I don't know if they're going to go back to matte paintings for backgrounds, but I'd rather
honestly,
they do that
if
than
they
cancel
have to,
it.
Yeah. If they have to do that, I'd be okay as long as the writing's good. Plus, obviously, the cast. I mean, you've got Michelle Yeoh. What's his name? Isaacs.
The British guy.
Yeah.
Who's a great actor.
Though, supposedly, his character's going to die, and she becomes the captain of that ship.
Oh, well.
So.
That sucks.
Yeah. You won't be around very long.
I thought I remember hearing something that they were going to have different starships. It wasn't just going to be a story about one ship. Is that right?
Yeah. So Michelle Yeoh is the captain of one ship, and then Jason Isaacs is the captain of the Discovery. And I believe that the main character, Michael Burnham, she becomes the first officer on the Discovery. But Michelle Yeoh's ship is still around and is involved in the plot arc.
And this is pre-Kirk?
Yes.
Like, where is it in the timeline?
It's still pre-Kirk.
What about Enterprise timeline? Like,
is it
around
post-Enterprise.
There?
It's well
oh,
past
it's
Enterprise.
After. Okay.
Yeah. And they've claimed it's in the Prime timeline.
Which means, like, that's
the non-J.J. Abrams timeline.
Right.
But they've got Klingons that look like the ones in Into Darkness. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on there.
But are they really Klingons? Did they actually confirm it?
No, they didn't confirm it.
Maybe they're not. Maybe there's some weird offshoot.
People think they're Klingons just because they seem to use bladed weapons that look a lot like Bat'leths. And there was a thing where they were screaming and it may have been a Klingon funeral. During the production, somebody tweeted a shot of the makeup and said, "Oh, look at our new Klingons." And then it was promptly deleted. So,
well, if they are, they got some explaining to do. They got some explaining to do.
Yes. Because if it's the Prime universe, then Enterprise still applies. And in that time period, the Klingons should look human because of the genetic resequencing to combat the augment virus, which is how they explained why humans in the Klingons in the original series looked like people with eyebrows, because Dr. Phlox had to like splice human DNA into them to stop them from dying. It was a whole thing. But yeah, I mean, so if it's in that universe and everything that happened in Enterprise is canon, it doesn't explain these new Klingons that look more reptilian, more strange, and truly alien. Like, it doesn't really explain that at all. I mean, maybe they'll just explain it away with, well, we were just able to upgrade the special effects and the makeup, so this is how they've always looked. Just previous productions couldn't make them look this awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that you just have to kind of accept it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the money, the budget to make the sets,
yeah,
you know, the way that they really wanted back in the 60s.
No, of course not.
So you kind of just have to shut your brain off.
But then, of course, the problematic thing is then they tried to explain it in canon instead of just making it a retcon.
Wait, when did they actually try to explain that?
Okay, so in DS9, when they go back to Trials with Tribbles.
Oh, right, right.
And Jadzia's like, what did Klingons all look like that? And Worf's like, it is not something we discuss. And but, then...
And she also made a comment about the unusually sexy short skirt uniforms.
Yes. And then in Enterprise, we actually find out how they ended up looking like that, because Klingons in Enterprise look like Klingons from TNG. But then the augment virus arc happens. Phlox comes up with that cure, and then the first guy that's treated with the cure looks like a original series Klingon. So that's how they explain that. So, I mean, it's tied directly into the canon now. Like, it's a thing that happened. So if you're playing in that universe, what the heck are these spiky Klingons? You know? Unless it really is in the J.J. Abrams timeline, in which case none of that applies, and we can just assume they've always looked like that in this universe. Either that, or there's some weird ancient primordial Klingons that were drifting in stasis for thousands of years, and they've been reawakened for reasons. I don't know.
Whatever it is, I just hope it's actually good and not,
yeah,
like a good explanation and not just some half-assed,
yeah, exactly,
you know, explanation.
Yeah, if they're just like, oh, those are the Klingons, they've always looked that way. What? I mean, I fully realize me having that position is totally a nerd. Well, actually... But,
yeah,
I mean,
but you got to realize, though, too, the people working on it, the production people, I mean... They obviously, they care about Star Trek. I can't see them really wanting to screw around with that material.
No, I mean, if you're doing a story in the Prime universe, then you have to be aware of all that continuity.
Now, whatever happened to Paramount Studios?
Oh, they're still involved.
Because this is on CBS, but I always wondered
so
what
Paramount,
happened. They had the rights to
CBS
Star Trek.
Is part of Paramount.
Okay.
Paramount grants the TV rights for Star Trek to CBS. They have exclusive access to it. So for that reason, we're never going to get an AMC or an HBO Star Trek. It'll always be CBS, which is a problem, but there we go. And then Paramount obviously produces the movies. Supposedly they're working on a new one, though they're going to have to find a way to write out Chekhov, sadly.
It really is sad that he's gone, but I'm done with that franchise, that movie franchise. I just refuse to watch. I've seen the first three. And I'm just, there's nothing in it for me.
Yeah, and I've heard what they're supposedly planning to do with the fourth movie, and it's so stupid. They're basically going to copy Voyage Home, only instead of going back in time to save whales, they go back in time to save Kirk's dad from the Kelvin. So they're gonna smash right into the first movie, and it's just gonna be a complete disaster.
That's just You know, in general, Star Trek movies have never, like, there's been the odd, you know, you get the odd one that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Most of them, to be honest, if you're a real Star Trek fan, just avoid Star Trek movies. They just don't work. The show, it doesn't work in a movie format.
It doesn't.
It needs to be a serialized thing.
It does. If you could maybe get away with it, mm-hmm. if it was like you did some kind of big action piece after an arc. So like...
First Contact is one of the few.
First Contact's good. If, for example, they'd done a Deep Space Nine movie that was the entire thing with the Dominion mm-hmm. and Gul Dukat trying to release the Pah Wraiths and all of that... That could have been a movie.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense because, but at least it's because they're tying it into a storyline.
Exactly.
Like they've done with, I mean, Babylon 5 did a couple of TV movies where they tied it back in. They were tying up loose ends of a storyline. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, they could have done stuff like that where it was like, okay, the season's over and there's this cliffhanger. So then they have this big TV movie or feature length movie that goes into how they get out of it or how this happens or some big event occurs. And then that has repercussions mm-hmm. on the next season.
See, and then that's why I think, and they can't do this with the J.J. Abrams universe movies, but with the odd Next Generation movie that was good, I felt like those, the ones that were good worked because, you know, they had callbacks to things that happened to characters on the series.
Yeah.
Like First Contact, it's all about the Borg. They had the Borg battle on the TV series. There's, you know, there's it's not given a lot of screen time, but there's a little bit of, you know, Picard talking about how he's still emotionally scarred by his experience of being taken by the Borg. And they even had the thing, remember he gets that notice in the movie that his brother and his, like, his whole extended family on that farm in France ends up dying in a fire. Mm-hmm. It's really tragic, but they don't really give him much screen time. But like, it's like little things like that, little callbacks to the series are great mm-hmm. for Star Trek fans.
Yeah, and that's actually covered a lot in Insurrection because Picard is facing kind of this internal turmoil, like he wants to stay with that woman and kind of build a life, like he has this desire to do that.
Or did I get it wrong? Or did that happen in Insurrection? Was it First Contact
Insurrection.
Where he got the news at the beginning of the movie that his brother had died?
I think it was Insurrection.
Okay, maybe that sounds about right.
Yeah. So then it dealt with, like, and because we had met them in an episode in the show, so it had that callback. So I mean, that's honestly why a lot of the TNG movies were quite good. Like, every other one was kind of terrible in terms of plot.
Well, and let's not talk about Nemesis.
Some other things, yeah. But overall, they kind of had that through line where you had to have watched the show to understand these really subtle character moments.
Spot the cat in Generations.
Spot, yeah.
Remember they found him? They thought he was dead, but they found him in the rubble.
Yep.
And then Data starts crying.
Yep. It was pretty good.
And then the audience cried. And then I cried. I'm such a little trooper.
I mean, overall, Generations was kind of awful, but, you know.
Well, you know, Insurrection isn't considered a very good movie.
Insurrection isn't great either.
But when you watch it, it's just like, I think the worst criticism that I saw was saying that it just seemed like one long TNG episode, but that in and of itself doesn't seem like a bad thing to me.
Yeah.
Because it really was just like a bigger budget episode.
It dealt with this big moral issue, and Picard decided to do something about it and countermand orders. Like, partially it kind of felt like a DS9 episode, like Sisko going against the wishes of Starfleet Command or something. Actually, there in the middle of nowhere.
That was a little bit sort of atypical. Like, Picard really had to question what to do, him, like, his own sense of the prime director. He had to break those rules.
Yeah.
So in that, I guess I should probably watch it again, but that was a good part of it. I do like that aspect of it.
Yeah.
So anyways, tying this back to Discovery, like, hopefully we see more of this type of thing.
Yeah. Like, what I want to see is, given this time period, I mean, there's a lot that Starfleet hasn't seen. There's a lot they don't know. So I think there's a lot of room to play with. I mean, it's in the name, Discovery. So with an arc, with a season arc. I think obviously these Klingon, not Klingons, are going to be involved somehow in the arc. They'll be important. And then in the trailer, it's made clear that they go to investigate some kind of anomaly in this star system. And there's like an asteroid belt or something. And she gets out in the jetpack and she ends up on this asteroid. And there's one of the Klingon, not Klingons, standing there. And I'm wondering if maybe they really are like Klingons that were frozen waiting there. And the anomaly is that the whole thing is waking up and they attack the two ships and Jason Isaacs ends up dead and she has to take command and it's this whole thing. And basically they get involved in this big thing because these new Klingons are kind of rampaging around. They're attacking the Federation. They're attacking the Klingons, the other Klingons. And so maybe some kind of thing where they end up cooperating with each other to take down these other Klingons. Because I think around this time, this is when the Klingons and the Federation sign the kind of non-aggression pact, the Cold War sort of detente thing, where they end up just cold friends, so to speak, so that by the Kirk era, they're just kind of all floating around, not attacking each other, not trying to kill each other, but just kind of, the Klingons, the Federation, trying to one-up each other and so on. So, I mean, yeah. There's obviously some event that leads to that detente.
Right, right, right.
So it's possible that this arc represents how that happens.
Yeah.
And having a common threat would be a great way to achieve that. So if these primeval Klingons show up and they start trying to kill everybody and they work together to stop them, that'd be neat.
Yeah.
And it would represent some difficult moral choices because it's like, well, they're Klingons too, but they're like totally different and they hate everyone. And what do we really do here? Do we kill them all? Do we throw them in jail? Do we maroon them on some other planet where they can live by themselves? Like what's the solution here?
As an aside, I would love if they brought some veteran Star Trek actors back to the series, but as different characters.
Oh yeah.
Because that's happened many times before. Like some of the actors that have played us, I can't remember, is it J.G. Hertzler or whatever that played, that Klingon, what's his name? He was on like he played a character on TNG.
Yeah.
Played on DS9.
He played Martok, I think.
Right. Exactly. So like it'd be great to see some of those guys come back as somebody totally different.
Oh yeah. I mean, they usually get
Add
a few
some gravitas
people.
To
there's
the series.
There's a few actors that always tend to play aliens on every Star
and,
Trek
what's
series.
His name? He's done a lot of sci-fi. He was in Enterprise too, and he played the Andorian guy. And he was on DS9 and he played
Jeffrey
Combs.
Yes.
Yeah. So bringing him back is like a totally, he's phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's awesome. He should be the Andorian captain's grandson or something.
That'd be something.
I have a feeling they're going to be in a totally different part of the Alpha Quadrant, but we'll see.
You know, something just popped in my head. Absolutely hilarious scene in DS9 when one of the Weyoun clones dies, and I always forget his name. What's Gul Dukat's right-hand guy who's working for the Dominion? But he just, I don't know if you remember this scene,
I know
he bursts out laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that scene.
I just love that.
And then doesn't he say like a thing, Weyoun 5, Weyoun 6, you're dropping like flies.
Yeah, he cracks a whole bunch of clone jokes.
Yeah. Didn't he end up defecting?
He did.
In the end?
He did, yeah.
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 He like surrendered Cardassia.
Right. So Discovery comes out when? Do we have a release date or an ETA?
It's the end of the year at some point. I think they actually announced the day with the new trailer.
Okay.
hold on. October. And they will be at Comic-Con July 22nd in Ballroom 20 at 2:30 p.m. Oh, well, another announcement from the producers. Major characters won't be safe. They can be killed off.
They're pulling a Joss Whedon.
And at least one at some point probably will be killed off.
Well, that's exciting.
Well, we all know it's Jason Isaacs, because how else does she become captain?
Unless they clone him and he comes back.
Oh, it also mentions part of the plot is actually given away in this. It says, Sonequa Martin-Green, as a brilliant Starfleet first officer, the first human educated on Vulcan, who's forced to make an impossibly difficult decision which impacts the entire Federation.
This has me excited.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. What could be so important, I wonder? And it involves the Klingons somehow. See, so it could be the thing.
I just wish, even if this, let's just say this series is going to be good, right? Why do we have to keep going to the past? Why can't we go to the future? That, to me, is, even though it takes place in the future, like, I've always wanted to see what happens after the next generation.
Yeah.
Like, what's happened to the Federation in current day? What happened to the Borg?
Well, I mean, I think I've mentioned this, like, probably a year or two ago.
Well, refresh our memory.
There is a cool book series called Destiny that reveals the true nature of the Borg. And
their creators? Where they came from?
Sort of, yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of, does
that diminish it? Diminish the mystery by explaining where they, how they were created? Was it done well? I don't know.
I felt it was done well. It kind of made sense, though. At the end of the arc, the Borg are eliminated as a threat. I will not elaborate, but Okay. Yes, they are no longer a threat at the end of the series.
The Borg has been, if they were to ever bring the Borg back, I don't know if the Borg could ever have the same kind of horrific impact that they did when they first appeared on TNG, because they were so intimidating, so relentless, and so creepy with the way that sort of H.R. Giger design of that square cube flowing through, flying through. It was just unnerving.
It's eerie. Yeah.
And I feel like it's like, I don't know if it would ever have the same impact if they made an appearance again.
Like the Cybermen on Doctor Who, the early Borg were creepier because there was more of a body horror aspect to them. Their designs were less mechanical, more organic. Later seasons, they were basically these cyborgs, and the organic components were basically useless. They just kind of were there, but non-functional or redundant or whatever. Like, they were way more machine towards the end of
Redesign the Borg, rethink the Borg. I mean, they could do a whole reboot of the Borg continuity stuff.
They could.
Make them even creepier.
Maybe. But I feel like they'd have to do a whole new universe, or like reintroduce the Borg in the Abrams universe.
It would be so cool to see, like, just the Borg have this, there's just like this onslaught on humanity, and have them actually attack Earth and be somewhat successful, and like have billions of people die, and then they're like, the human race is like scrambling to form these rebel factions that have to like rise up against the Borg and fight back to save humanity. Like, something like that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that could be interesting. But if Discovery succeeds, that could be an arc. That could be interesting. Revisit the Borg, have them attack, or see the effects of it firsthand.
Right. But they would have to change the continuity or retcon stuff, because it was always in TNG that Q exposed the Enterprise to the Borg for the first time.
Well, then Enterprise messed with it.
Yeah, no, yeah, they did. They totally
with regeneration.
Did. And then it was never spoken of again.
Yeah. Well, because they destroyed the science ship that had been assimilated, but not before it sent a signal out to the Gamma Quadrant, where the Borg were at that time. But that signal would have taken a long time to reach the Gamma Quadrant. So they would have received the signal around the time of TNG, and that cube that Q threw them at had probably been dispatched to find the source of the signal. Because at that point, it would have been badly degraded, and they wouldn't have been able to triangulate the source exactly. So that single cube was probably sent to investigate, and Q just kind of threw them at it to speed up the time of that encounter.
And we'll never have fun episodes again, like those all those Q episodes on TNG. Like, well, that's another character that I don't know if they could ever
Q was interesting,
bring that character
but
back.
To me, he was just kind of a retread of those omnipotent, crazy aliens from the original series, like Trelane.
But John DeLancey
made it work.
Delight to watch.
He made it work, but ultimately, he was just annoying. He was a nuisance. He wasn't right. like.
But that's what made it fun. He was a nuisance to Picard.
Yeah. And I mean, the way they played off each other, that was fun. But I mean, as a villain, as an antagonist, he just didn't really have a lot of staying power.
Well, because you knew Voyager, Q would never kill Picard in the Enterprise.
Yeah,
he had too much fun.
Exactly.
He was like a trickster.
Exactly. And like by the time Voyager came around, every episode with Q was just like, oh, it's him again. Right.
So the problem, and this goes back to good storytelling, there have to be high stakes involved. There's no high stakes involved with Q.
No,
it's
exactly.
It's just one big joke.
He's just like, oh, I'm here again, everyone.
I mean, they tried to make it a little more serious where Q puts the, you know, humanity on trial, but it was never, there was no real consequence to that, right? I mean, some of the episodes were more interesting, like when Q gets booted from the Continuum and he applies for asylum or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, some of that was interesting, but it just kind of, his character had diminishing returns, let's say. If they were going to redo a character like that, I would have him kill somebody right away to establish that he is all powerful and he can do whatever the fuck he wants. I don't know, like more mischievous, but in like a bad sort of way, like the stuff, like Q flinging the Enterprise to meet the Borg, like that.
Yeah,
that was bad because
because people did die. That Q,
people died.
That
yeah,
Q cut through the saucer section like a friggin' hot knife through butter.
Yeah,
and took out a section of it and killed probably several hundred people.
Yeah, I think it was like 29.
But
anyways,
but
still,
that was one glimpse of Q doing something.
And if they were going to have a character like that again, it would need to be like that all the time. Like when he shows up, you know, there is a very real chance that people are going to die. Not, oh, it's the funny god clown again. What zany hijinks is he going to do this time? Like, no, characters like that cannot be just weird clowns. They have to show up sparingly. And when they do show up, you know shit's going to get real. And you just hope to God he either gets bored and leaves, or you somehow find a way to get rid of him. And it should be very difficult to get rid of him. So, yeah, I mean, that's how it should be done if you want to have a more grounded show. But I don't know. I just feel like there isn't really room for a character like that if you're trying to tell a truly grounded human story.
Yeah, I agree. As much as I would love to see like John DeLancey again, that type of character, I don't think it really works. If we're really trying to move Star Trek to the next level, to make it more grounded, like you say, to just have better stories, stronger characters.
Yeah.
Higher stakes. I don't think I can't see how that would work. I mean, you would really have to go back to the drawing board and really try to sort of rethink how that the character of Q and the Q Continuum would fit. Like, how would it fit? And if you can't really make it work 100%, then it probably shouldn't be in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I fucking love DS9. The one time he showed up, Sisko just punched him in the fucking face And
well, he's the polar opposite of Picard. I love that.
He was never seen again on DS9 after that.
Yeah.
Ever. He just showed up one time. Sisko decks him, right, and he leaves forever.
Because to me, it always seemed that relationship between Picard and Q, it's always like the school bully. You know how people would always, like as a kid, you know, your parents or teachers would always give you advice, you know, don't pay them attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you ignore them and don't give them the time of day, they have no material to work with.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's suddenly you become boring.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So don't interact. Whereas Picard would just...
Oh yeah, he would take the bait. He would take the bait
every
single time.
And Sisko just would not have it.
Yeah.
And just didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Like, he was like, I've heard about your shit on the Enterprise. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh god, and I love Sisko.
And he's and Q was basically just like, okay, geez. Picard's more fun anyways. Like, yeah, it just doesn't work on a more serious show. Like, you just can't do it. So, I mean, yeah, you could rethink it, but honestly, I just don't feel like that kind of character really works.
Yeah, and going back to that specific episode with Q on DS9, it almost feels like, it seems to me, that's like the writers telling people that this character doesn't really work anymore on this type of show.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally think that's what that was. It was like, oh yeah, you know, Q, yeah, not here.
Like, I just, I can imagine like the conversation in the writer's room being like, one person says, oh yeah, we should totally bring Q back. It's like, oh, okay, well, how about we get Sisko to just like punch him in the face and that'll be it.
Yeah. Good pitch.
What else? Well, let's wrap. So.
Okay. So Star Trek Discovery starts in October. We will have more information and hopefully a new trailer this month at San Diego Comic-Con. We will see how it takes shape. Hopefully it's closer to what we're expecting than not closer. Hopefully we don't get a second trailer and it's just like, we're running around space. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully not.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean,
judging
doubt
by
it,
the last trailer, I can't see it. I can't see it going that way.
Well, I mean, there was that one alien who was like, I have one, my species was made for one purpose, to sense death, and I sense death right now. Like, really? That's your purpose? You sense death? That seems kind of one note. Should we just have one of you everywhere?
I see dead people.
Like,
right.
Like, we just have one of them everywhere, and they're just like, oh no, death. And everyone just stops what they're doing and like goes in the opposite direction or what? Like,
Yeah, okay.
That's dumb. That's like a dumb idea.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
But the rest of it was okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know.
October this year.
Actually, no, the other dumb thing. Why did they go halfway across a desert to be beamed up?
Interference? I don't know.
The start, she's like following Michelle Yeoh. She's like, oh, where are we going, Captain? And then finally the ship shows up and beams them up. Like, what? I mean, okay, we don't have the whole context of that scene. Maybe she was at like the Pajem Monastery on Vulcan and that place is heavily shielded against transporters because it's in the middle of the forge. So they would have had to walk out of the forge to be beamed up in the first place. So maybe that, but yeah, it seems kind of odd without context. We will wait to find out more at the risk of being, again, one of those nerds. Well, actually, transporter range is quite far. They would have been able to beam them up from anywhere. Yeah, no, we'll wait. We'll wait to see.
And we may still do another episode to talk about Discovery with a special guest as well.
Yes.
So we'll try and get that one sorted out soon.
Yeah. I think we might line that one up for Comic-Con. So after the panel, we can have that episode and go okay. into a more in-depth discussion.
And when is Comic-Con?
July 22nd.
Okay, so we got some time to get that yeah. set up. Okay.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that.
You've been listening to the Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.